Episode 1083, My Strength is My Story with Courtney Carver, Soulful Simplicity.
Moms, needing a little inspiration and a ray of hope? You've come to the right place. This is the show that you can turn to for just the pick-me-up you need. This is Create Your Now, Your Best Selfie. Here's your host, certified life coach, personal trainer, and nutritionist, Christiane Wargo.
Staring at a stop sign, watching people drive.
Happy, happy day. It is my favorite day of the week. It is My Strength is My Story series, and we have on an extraordinary woman. Her name is Courtney Carver, and I promise you, your life is going to become simplified. It is. We had so much fun. I cannot wait to share her story with you. Friends and family of Courtney's, for all of you who are brand new, welcome to our family. I'm so delighted of your presence. If you already haven't had the opportunity, you'll want to head on over to createyournow.com where you can learn more and sign up for the Kisses newsletter, the Keep It Simple Strategy Everyday Solutions to Live, Love, and Impact. Well, Courtney is a firecracker, yet she's so simplistic in how she goes about her life. She has a brand new book out called Soulful Simplicity. And I'm telling you right now, this is a way to kick off your New Year's. I don't care where you are, stop for just a moment and listen in to these golden nuggets that Courtney shares. She shares from the heart. You can read it, you can feel it, you can hear it. We talk about yoga. We talk about Project 333, which you'll have to listen to understand. We talk about busyness and trust and love. And we talk about how to get to who you are. We're living so many crazy lives. What do you want different out of your new year? What do you want to change? Well, maybe for you, Courtney's message will ring in the new year louder and brighter. Without further ado, let's welcome in Courtney Carver, Soulful Simplicity. Hello and welcome to Create Your Now, Your Best Selfie. I am so excited. We have someone here who is going to declutter my life. They're going to simplify it to the point of I will have nothing to worry about. It is Courtney Carver who inspires many around the world to be more with less. Her blog about simplifying your life and really living. Courtney is a wife of 12 years to her fabulous husband, Mark, and mother to Bailey. Her life's mission is to help you discover the joy in less. After being diagnosed with multiple sclerosis in 2006, Simplicity has redefined how she lives her life, and Courtney is the creator of Project 333. In her brand new book, oh, let me grab it here. It is Soulful Simplicity. Oh, hold on. We got to show the cover. It's beautiful, the advanced cover that I have. Soulful Simplicity, how living with less can lead to so much more. You know what, Courtney? I don't know about you, but I am ready to simplify my life and learn your equations. Welcome. Come on in, my friend.
Hi there. Thanks for having me, and thanks for the warm introduction.
Oh, you're so welcome. It's an honor to have you here. And I know that you start off in your book saying you are not an expert, but you have a heart for truly living your life with simplicity and welcoming in the love, bringing the love back.
I do. Thanks for mentioning that too, because I don't think of myself as an expert, and I prefer actually to learn from other messy humans compared to experts sometimes. Like, I like to get the expert's view, but the people that I find myself really connecting with and learning from are people who are in it, people who are going through whatever they're going through, people who are honestly sharing their stories. And I really wanted to show up as me, the person going through all of this, and not some self-proclaimed know-it-all, I guess.
That's beautiful. Well, I have to ask this question before we get too far into the book and everything that you've learned through your life's journey up to this point, because I know you would agree that you're always learning. But how do you fill up your day?
Oh, like what does a typical day look like for me? Well, it almost every day starts with a morning routine for me. So I've been practicing a morning routine for, gosh, more than a decade now. And it changes all the time. But right now it looks like, so I wake up and I have a glass of water and an espresso. And then I dive in. And I typically start by writing 3 pages of anything on my mind. Nothing riveting or interesting, typically. Nobody would ever want to read these things that I write down. It's like, What should I have for breakfast? Thinking about the day before, you know, writing down thoughts that came up overnight, just anything I can think of to clear my mind. Mm-hmm. And then from there, I meditate for anywhere from 10 to 30 minutes and then typically either practice a little yoga or take a walk or jump on the treadmill if it's too cold outside. We have a little gym in our apartment building, so I will go on the treadmill there. And then from there, I have a good breakfast and then jump into work. And luckily for me, work looks a little different all the time. Some days I'm having great conversations like this. Other times I'm writing. Typically I'm writing and creating for the blog or for a new project. And I usually take a nice break in the afternoon and then work a little bit more, saving the admin stuff for the afternoon. And then evenings I generally spend with my husband or daughter. Oh. And or daughter, yeah.
And or daughter, whether she might be home or not.
Well, Bailey is 22, so she lives on her own. She doesn't live far from us, but she has her own place. Yeah.
Well, that's kind of nice because that gives you and Mark some private time and allows sure. you guys to continue growing. I know as a mom of five, I appreciate the quiet times.
I can imagine.
Oh, all right. So early in life, let's say we go back even to elementary school. You were just totally primed, weren't you, for this whole idea of simplicity?
I think not. I'm a slow learner. It took me a while to get here. So I think that growing up and even into early adulthood, I wasn't on the track for a simple life. I was really caught up in the more. I always thought the solution was more. And I mean, probably not in elementary school. You know, I don't think I was even thinking that far ahead then, but definitely high school, college, post-college, it was all about how can I solve this problem with more? Mm-hmm. Like if I'm behind on my bills, I need to work harder and make more, or I'm not getting the attention or respect from someone, I have to prove myself more. I have to work harder. It just felt like it was always about the more. More money, more things on the to-do list, more proving, more exhaustion, more depletion. It was always more. Mm.
And when your life really started out in adulthood, you met a man and you had this not so perfect start in a marriage, and then Bailey comes along. Talk a little yeah. bit about that area, because that kind of then flows into what comes later on in early 2000.
Sure. And this is really not challenging for me to talk about, but it's not something I talk about a lot. I don't write about it very much. And I haven't really included it as part of my story until I wrote the book and realized it's really a big part of my story. But it just seems so long ago and wasn't the happiest time of my life. So I've sort of tried to bypass it, but the book brought that out a little bit. Mm-hmm. But I was married pretty young for the first time. And I think I was 22 or 23, so the age my daughter is now, which I can't believe or imagine that for her, of course. But I married someone who loved alcohol more than he loved me, I guess would be the easiest way to sum it up. And I didn't really think about it going in. I think I was too young to really understand that. Mm-hmm. I thought that, again, I could prove my love, that I could win over any obstacle, and I just couldn't compete with the strength of the alcoholism. Mm. And I was married for 7 years, and I knew from the minute that Bailey was born that I wouldn't be married to this person for very much longer. And a couple of years after she was born, I left and started a new life, really, a life, you know, as a single mom, and not really knowing what was going to come next. Only that I knew I couldn't be in that situation anymore, and I really couldn't put her through that. I mean, I think a lot of us get to that place where we think we're so strong and we can handle anything, but when it comes to our children enduring that, it's much easier to draw the line.
Mm-hmm. It is much easier to draw the line. And you wanted to expand the line, though, a little bit. As a single parent, you wanted to give Bailey more. You wanted to continue.
I sure did.
That every single Christmas was better than the first, I believe you wrote about.
Yeah, well, that was my childhood. My childhood, every Christmas was better than the last and bigger in terms of gifts and stuff. And also love. I mean, I'm close to my parents, and they brought it all during Christmas for sure. But all through the year. But at Christmas, it was really like a lot of gifts over the top. And so I wanted to give that to my daughter as well. And I think I wanted to give her more of everything to, and I wasn't thinking this through then. Mm-hmm. It's all kind of like when you look back and assess and think, you know, why did I do what I do? Why did I behave the way I behaved? And I wanted to give her more to ease her pain. You know, she was 2 or 3 years old. So, I mean, maybe a little too young to even really feel the impact of not having her dad around, but still I knew it would be a big deal at some point that it would, you know, this is something that she's now going through because of me, because of my choices. And I wanted to ease that pain. And again, more was always my go-to. So, you know, we're going to do more together. We're going to see more of the world. We're going to have more presents at the holidays. It's always going to be more, 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 bigger, better. And we're going to live happily ever after. I don't know. That was my 20-something mind.
Yeah. But it worked at the time for you.
I don't know if it did or not. I mean, I can say that we had some really fun times together, especially like shortly thereafter where we did some really fun vacations. But I was always overextending myself. And she didn't know that, of course. But I was always overextending myself, whether it be with time, energy, money, you know, all my resources. I was right on the edge of what I could give. Mm. And I wasn't willing to admit that. And it just took it all kind of crumbling down in terms of my health for me to say, let's take a step back. Mm-hmm. And I think the way I'm describing it isn't that I was some, you know, I don't know what I sound like when I talk about myself this way, but it felt very normal at the time. Mm-hmm. I don't think it looked like I was out of control. It didn't feel like I was out of control, but I was.
Well, I think too, Courtney, it's somewhat equal to our busyness. Whether we are wanting to have more, we want to act like we have our calendar filled with everything. And that was your normal. It wasn't necessarily wrong or right. It's just the facts of the life that you lived at that time. And it wasn't until later, after you met your Prince Charming, Mark, and he became a part of your life and Bailey's life, that you got a phone call that changed everything.
I sure did. And a lot changed between that time I'm describing and after Mark and I got married. There was about 6 or 7 years in between that period of time that we really got to know each other slowly and became great friends and fell in love and became a family. It took some time, and I'm so glad it did. But I was still in that mentality of I can do it all. Mm. And this phone call that you're talking about was a phone call from my neurologist's office after months of debilitating fatigue and vertigo and tingling in my hands, numbness in my face, that I had multiple sclerosis. And she called me at work and delivered the news over the phone, which was horrifying. I mean, I can't imagine it would have been pleasant even to hear it in the doctor's office, but I was so caught off guard and in an environment where I didn't want to be vulnerable and certainly didn't want to take that news because I didn't know what to do with it. It wasn't like I was prepared for that. I don't think any of us are. But it was really, looking back now, I can say it was such a blessing, not the phone call in the workplace, but to get that news. It was really finally the wake-up call that I paid attention to, that I acted on, and that was the catalyst for changing my entire life.
And here comes Be More with Less.
Oh, no. Like I said, I'm a slow learner.
Well, eventually you get there, but you had to make some subtle changes. And where did your subtle changes begin, Courtney?
Well, they did start almost immediately. It didn't start with a blog all tied up in a pretty package, but it started with after a couple of weeks of me just being scared and just overwhelmed with the information, I decided I just have to figure out how I'm going to live well with this disease, because otherwise, who knows what's going to happen? I mean, I could have anything from blindness to paralysis to cognitive decline, like really terrible, terrible symptoms of this disease. And you never know how it's going to unfold. It's not something that you can plan. But I wanted to figure out how I could live well with MS. So I started paying attention to other people who were living well with the disease, reading stories, meeting people, and doing research about what it takes. And all of my research and all of the people I met, everything always seemed to come back to stress and how stress really contributed to not necessarily the cause of the disease, but to exacerbations, to symptoms, to just not feeling well. And thinking about it, I thought, my gosh, I could tie that back to migraines and catching the flu all the time or a cold or other things. It wasn't just MS. It was just this overall state of being that I never really connected stress to. I just thought stress was part of life. It just comes with it. It's just part of it. But when I realized how much stress was contributing to my MS, or what I thought was, I decided to eliminate as much of it as I could. And I started with my diet because I kind of figured that might be the place where I could see the biggest impact. And I'm not a nutritionist or a doctor. I don't recommend dietary changes for other people. But what worked for me was eliminating a lot of animal protein. So most animal meat, a lot of dairy. And then eventually I changed to, because I still experiment with my diet. I think it's so interesting how we relate to food on a health level. And an emotional level. But for me, I love pasta and bread and all of those yummy, delicious, carby things, but my body doesn't love them. And so when I'm eating less of them and less sugar, I feel even less stress in my body. So I'm always assessing and testing and changing my diet because I feel like my body's always changing. But in the beginning, it was really focused on less meat, less dairy, less animal products overall.
And you really found what worked for you in your diet, that you have been able to sustain that long term, not just, oh, I'm going to do this for 3 months and I'm going to walk away from it.
What's so interesting is that all of the changes I made this time lasted, whether they were with diet or anything else. And I was always one for change or experimenting or trying different things before, but my approach to change was completely different. So prior to this wake-up call, my approach to change was fast, furious, like, let's get the sexy results in 21 days. Yeah, always. And yeah. With this, I realized that something was broken in the way I approached change, in starting new habits, and decided to do it differently. And everything from that point forward was slow and steady. One thing at a time, take as much time as it takes. So for instance, with the diet, instead of just being like, all right, I'm just going to cut all animal protein out of my life, I started with one thing. So I think I stopped eating red meat, cows, and then I stopped eating pork or pigs. And then when that felt kind of like the new normal, chicken and turkey. And just continued on that path. And the same went for my other changes. You know, after the diet, I thought, what else is really stressful in my life? And it was debt. I had a phenomenal amount of debt that I had started when I was 18 years old, is when I first went into debt and never came out until, I mean, I was 36 or 37 when I got this diagnosis. And I had been in debt my entire adult life. And to the point where during certain times I'd be getting collection calls. And it's really, that's just for me anyway, some of the worst stress possible is money stress. So my husband and I decided to become debt free, and we did it the slow and steady way, like the very practical approach to it. And it took probably 3 years. But we've never gone back into debt as a result because of what we learned while we were making the changes. You know, everything had a chance to work on us while we were making the change instead of just getting to the end goal. I think when we're so focused on that end goal, we miss all those lessons in between, and then we end up right back where we started. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of a tangent.
That's great. And you guys are all going to want to pick up your own copy of Soulful Simplicity, How Living With Less Can Lead to So Much More. Courtney has a lot of gems in her book, and you're going to want to pick up a copy, especially think about this. You just survived the holidays. You've got New Year's around the corner. So you're probably already thinking, I've got New Year's resolutions. I need to have this balanced, healthy lifestyle. Picking up her book is going to give you some of those golden nuggets, practical nuggets that you can use and implement little bits at a time. And so I would really encourage you to pick up your own copy. Well, Courtney, in your book, obviously it's titled Soulful Simplicity. For just us, so we're all on the same page, define for us simplicity.
Simplicity. So simplicity, I don't define that as always the easiest path. But it's a streamlined path. It's a way to move from point A to point B without a lot of struggle. So there, while not always easier, it is, it's just, I'm saying this, this is a terrible definition. I don't know why you asked me the most basic question and I can't answer it. But for simplicity in my life has been really eliminating distraction and stress and giving me the space to focus on what's most important. So I think it looks a little different for everyone. I don't think it's I think simplicity for a family of with five children is going to look a little different than a couple of empty nesters like Mark and myself, or a single person, or somebody that travels a lot. It's going to look a little bit different, but it's really assessing what's important to you and getting rid of everything that isn't. We make a lot of excuses, I think, to just hold on to everything, whether it be clutter and stuff or ideas or things that we believe about ourselves or things that we believe about other people. We have to be willing to let go when things aren't working anymore.
Let go. And you even bring that up in your book. In fact, one of the things that grabbed me was the just in case. And I thought that was very interesting. So share a little bit about just in case.
Oh, those words. Don't we love those words?
I don't anymore, though.
Well, just in case is an excuse for almost everything. If you think about how many times you say it, and now that we're talking about it, people are going to be hearing it a lot more in their own conversations. We say just in case all the time, especially when it comes on to holding on to things. I'm going to keep that just in case. But what we don't do, which would be really helpful, is to finish that sentence. Just in case of what? Please explain. And I always say to myself when I hear myself say that, I say, tell me more about that. So just in case what? And almost always, like, my just in case excuse is so ridiculous that I laugh at myself and let the item go. So we have to do that. It's really just a procrastination tool. I think just in case means never. We're probably not going to use the just in case thing. But if we're too terrified to let go, then hide it for a little while. Get it out of sight for 60 days. Whenever I do that, I forget what it was. So I think maybe I didn't need it, but I have to prove that to myself. So without terrifying myself and letting it all go, I would just get it out of sight for a little while. And then if I couldn't remember it, then let it go.
Have you ever, Courtney, regretted something that you let go of?
I wish I had, because I think it would make such a great story, but I don't. Not at all. I barely remember most of the stuff that I let go of. I mean, I think if I really were to do it, a thoughtful inventory, I could come up with a good list of things that I remember fondly, but none that I miss having in my life at all. Even the stuff I used to say, I would never get rid of this. It's this kind of contagious thing and kind of a confidence builder when you start to let go and realize that you're better off without whatever that was. You feel confidence in, well, wow, if I create more space for myself, a little more time for myself, perhaps, who knows what will happen? Like, I'll have better health, like in my case, better health, more connected relationships, more time to think and to process information and to decide what the next best step is. Where before it felt like I was just always reacting. I didn't have time to think about what the next best thing was. You just have to do it. Keep going, keep going, keep going. And now I can be a little more thoughtful about that because I'm not so overwhelmed with clutter, debt, stress, whatever.
It reminds me of, you said something in your book that really, I mean, it gripped me fast. And it was, you'll quote it better than I will, so I'll do the paraphrase and you tell me what you said. But the whole idea that our lives and what we do is more like a storage container.
Yes. I think what I may have said about that is our homes are not storage containers. They're a place for joy and connection. So let's make room for more of that. I used to treat my home like a storage container. And in fact, when I was looking for new places to live, I'd think, does it have enough cabinet space? Does it have enough closet space? Do we have room for this? Is there a garage? Is there an attic? Is there a storage shed? Do I have room for all my stuff? Why wasn't I asking questions like, how will we live here? How will we spend time together in this place? How do we want to live here? How do we want to live in general? And asking those questions really led to some interesting answers. I mean, when we sold our house, we sold a 2,000 square foot house that had the attic and garage and storage shed I just mentioned, tons of closet space.
Lots of shoes.
Lots of shoes. There were shoes in every closet, I'm not going to lie. But after we had finished decluttering and paying off our debt, we had empty rooms in our house. And we started asking those questions. How do we really want to live? And the answer wasn't spending more time taking care of our house. It was spending more time out in the world, exploring, traveling, skiing, hiking, doing other things besides taking care of house stuff. And that's why we decided to sell our house at probably one of the worst times in the market to sell a house. But finally, we could make decisions based on something that wasn't money driven. We wanted to make a decision based on our hearts, based on how we wanted to live today, not how we wanted to live in 10 years when the market might bounce back or not. I think too often we're making decisions based on something that may never happen.
What do you think in today's world is contributing to us? Okay, maybe we're not hoarders. I know there's that horrible show. I'm not saying going that far, but where we feel like we have to have all this stuff, living up to the Joneses. I mean, that was a part of it when I was a young girl. I remember kind of that in my father being a minister. He would, you know, refer to things about, you know, living like the Joneses and all of that jazz when he would do sermons, etc. But what do you think now that it's contributing? Because we have technology. If you think about it, we really could live truly as a minimalist if we wanted to.
Sure. I think there is something to be said for that whole comparison game with the Joneses and what our community and our neighbors have, that even if it's not this conscious, I got to keep up with them, it does kind of work its way into your mindset, thinking that you need certain things to belong to a certain neighborhood or community, so that your kids feel like they measure up. I think that's part of it. But I think the bigger part, at least for me, was easing pain. Like, shopping and accumulating things was really a way to ease pain. And that pain could be different for everyone. It's probably the same pain I thought I would ease for my daughter that I wanted to ease for myself. So the pain of disappointment, the pain of boredom, the pain of frustration, of working a job that I didn't like, thinking, you know, I deserve nice things for working this job that I'm kind of miserable at, mm-hmm. not putting it together in my head that I have to now work more to pay for the things that I'm bringing in to ease my pain from working this job, like insert vicious circle here. Mm-hmm. It was just crazy making when I think about it. Yeah, so I think that's part of it too. You know, we don't want to sit still and think about what's wrong and how to feel better in a more meaningful way when we can just order something quick on Amazon or go to the mall or have that quick fix. And we do it in all different ways, whether it be stuff or food or alcohol or behavior. You know, we have a tendency to want that quick break from the pain. Mm. But it's all temporary until you figure out what the pain is and how to soothe it in a more meaningful, permanent way.
Mm-hmm. In your journey, you talk about your learning to love yoga, a meditation practice that before it was really not a part of you. Talk a little bit about that, because I believe when you say, you know, we don't sit, we don't have that stillness anymore, you've created that in your morning routine.
I have. Yeah, I have stillness in every day of my life, even on the most chaotic days. And I would say especially on the most chaotic days, because those are the days that inherently I want to jump into so fast. Like if I know I have a lot of meetings scheduled, which isn't very often, but when I do, I think when I wake up in the morning, okay, I got to get to work. And I want to skip my morning routine. I really do, because I feel like if I can just squeeze that extra time in, anytime I do it, it's just a miserable failure because I'm not as centered. I'm definitely more distracted during the day, more reactive. But if I just wait and take those first few minutes or hours or however long I devote to it during the day, to that morning routine, to sitting still, then the rest of the day is so much better, even if it is pretty full. Mm. Just coming back to that real quick.
Yeah.
I also didn't want to get still at first after this MS diagnosis, because I thought at first I was still holding on to that more. So I didn't want people to think that I was slowing down. Mm. And in my mind somewhere I was thinking, oh my gosh, yoga, like that's a slow sport. Why? I want to go skiing. Like, why do people want me to do yoga? Now, I had never taken yoga, so I didn't realize that that can also really kick your butt. Yeah. And, but I did resist it at first, the whole slow down thing, mm-hmm. but I'm so glad I stayed open to it and eventually took my first yoga class and never stopped going. Mm.
For someone who's struggling right now, Courtney, with pain, and they're saying, I am kind of sort of identifying with you right now, and they don't want to admit it fully, but they're like, yeah, can relate. Oh yeah, sort of, I'm there. And they're wanting to begin this idea of how do I bring in stillness? I don't know how to sit still. I'm always on the go. I get up at 5:30 every morning and I'm not done until my head hits the bed pillow at 11. Where would you tell them to start?
I'd say start with 5 minutes. One of the things that always deterred me from starting is that I didn't have enough time. And I would think, I don't have time to sit down and meditate or put my hands on my heart or even take a yoga class. When am I going to do that? But it really did start for me with a 5-minute morning routine. And that doesn't sound like enough time, but it's enough to start. And so even if you are just waking up, grabbing your tea or coffee, and before you deal with the family or anything else, you just shut the door, go hide in your closet or the bathroom or wherever you need to be to get alone, and just sit down and sit quietly for 5 minutes and sip your tea or coffee. That's enough to start. And for the first week of my practice, it was 5 minutes long every day. And then the next week I added 5 more minutes. I mean, it took me a long time before I could build to a 30-minute practice in the morning. Mm. And then I looked forward to it so much that I didn't mind getting up a little bit earlier to do it. So yeah, my advice is 5 minutes. And if you are relating to this, to the pain, like I feel pain like this, I know for me when I would think I was feeling that, I would distract myself from it as often as I could, because I knew once I went there, I would have to make changes. Like once I knew, I would know. But it's so worth the journey, and it can take as long as it takes. There's no hurry. I mean, once you start, you're always going to be moving away from that reaction that you have now to the pain. So why not start with 5 minutes and just see for yourself? Just see for yourself. You know.
Mm-hmm. Well, you all are going to want to work in 5 minutes, because you can include that stillness by reading and getting her brand new book, Soulful Simplicity, How Living with Less Can Lead to So Much More. You just mentioned about put your hands on your heart. And that is one that I think also, I mean, it combines in with the stillness, the yoga, the meditation, and the practice of it. And you didn't just mention this once in your book. You mentioned this, I think, at least three times or four. I mean, I read it and I was like, I think she's hitting this home. So bring it home for us a little bit on put your hands on your heart.
Yeah, I do talk about it. So there's four sections in the book, and there is a chapter on putting your hands on your heart in each section, because it's really the core of it for me was never about, even though it felt like it for a minute, but it was never about clean bookshelves or countertops. It was about remembering myself and stepping back into who I am, into my heart, and not pretending to be someone else or making compromises to get ahead or to have more. So in order to get to know myself better and to trust myself and remind myself of who I am, I started this heart practice that came along with my meditation and yoga, although sometimes it just stands on its own now, and I'll be in the middle of the day and we'll practice a little bit. But I just typically, it's after a meditation, I'll put my hands, both of them, on my heart and just listen. And sometimes I will ask questions. Sometimes I'll just listen. Sometimes there's nothing happening except my heart beating, but my hands are holding my heart, saying, I've got you. I trust you. We're in this together. And it, even if no answers come, it's a reminder that I've got my heart at the center of my decisions. And that really guides me.
And when you say the heart at the center of your decisions, I think a lot of us are just disconnecting the mind with the heart, and we let them each kind of do their own thing. And we forget this between the 16 to 18 inch drop here, that it needs to be connected. And you are creating that space to say, okay, wait a minute here, that there's more than just writing $15 to pay the water bill this month. There's more to life. Be more with less.
We definitely forget that there is a connection. And when we do that and there is a huge disconnect, mm-hmm. that's, for me, where the pain started. That within that disconnect, that is where the pain came from, is me constantly stepping outside of myself, outside of my heart. And that happened, all the times that I said yes to things when I wanted to say no, thank you. It happened many of the times when I would say just a minute to my daughter, and then an hour later remember that she needed me for something or asked me a question. It would come every time that I tried to cram 14 hours into 8 in a work day, or just all of those times where I didn't consult my heart first. And it's a practice. It's not something that is automatic for me. It's something that I have to come back to all the time, as a reminder and for guidance, because I know a lot of things about myself. I know a lot of things about my body, about my life, but for a long time I didn't trust that. You know, I thought everyone else knew better, and I was just always looking out for the answers when all I had to do was look in. So that's very important to me.
And you created time and space to allow the love to come back in.
Yeah. I mean, that's, I guess, kind of getting back to that. It wasn't never about the space on the bookshelves. it was always about love, and it still is for me. And why I had my focus on every other little thing, I don't know. Like, I would say the words love a lot, but I don't think I connected to them, to it, in the same way that I do now, because I have room to think about it. You know, if I love myself, I have to treat myself in a loving way. If I love someone else, I have to treat them in a loving way. You can't have one without the other. But if I'm so overwhelmed and overextended and exhausted and sick and tired, how can I treat anyone in a loving way? And so that kind of comes back to, you know, a lot of people ask me, well, how would I do this morning routine? I've got a family, people need me, I've got email, I've got to serve everybody else. But you cannot serve them in your best possible way unless you are serving yourself first. Mm-hmm. You just cannot.
Yeah. But we try, so, and we make up excuses to do that all the time.
Of course we do. Of course we do, because it feels too selfish to start with ourselves first. Mm-hmm. And then we do. We make the excuses. We don't have time. So-and-so needs us. The email's important. Like, when everything's important, nothing is. And I think we have to keep reminding ourselves of that and just putting, kind of taking a stand and saying, I'm going to try this for 5 minutes a day. I'm going to serve myself first, whether that's my coffee on the closet floor, whether it's writing down, you know, a few ideas that I have in mind, or asking questions of my heart, whatever it is, for 5 minutes a day. I think we can start there.
Hmm. How do you think, Courtney, that simplicity has affected your relationship with your husband and your daughter?
I think it's affected it a lot. I think that, for starters, they come first. I mean, they come before my phone. They come before my email. And I know we can all say that. Like, we all think that our families come before those things. But if we look at our actions, do they? And believe me, I'm still guilty of checking my phone in a conversation, but now I recognize it, and I'll think, what am I doing? Like, this, if this person in front of me is the most important thing happening right now, why am I looking at my phone? There's nothing that's happening on my phone right now that is more important than this conversation. So while I think that I had time for them before, now I have the presence and the time for them. So I show up for them, where I don't think I did that all the time before, or most of the time even. I would be kind of halfway in to the conversation. So I'd have a little bit of, like, I'm in this, I'm here, but half my brain was somewhere else, mm-hmm. whether it be on an email or my to-do list or uncertainty or worried about yesterday or worried about tomorrow. I think now I can really show up for my friends and family, and that's a huge game changer in relationships. When people know that you're really there for them and you're listening and you're all the way there, it's a different connection than the halfway there.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think in your book, you share a story when you're driving in your car and you're on your phone and your daughter wants to tell you how her day went. And you're trying to multitask, as we women do so proudly and boldly, and we can do everything, and we can drive and not hit a red light and not, you know, hurt anybody, and we get to answer emails and calls, and we can still hear the conversation of the day from our children. Yet something stopped you, and you found out that this is a red flag, and you were missing out.
Yeah. It's almost embarrassing for me to talk about or to think about that. Not only did I, you know, dismiss her in favor of my phone driving home from work on the freeway, but I risked our lives and the lives of everyone around us. It's been, I don't know how long now, I want to say 8 or 9 years since that happened. But now, look, I have enough trouble just staying focused on driving. So why I thought I could drive and work and have a conversation at the same time, it baffles me. I mean, it really is a miracle that nothing happened. I mean, we got home and I did not remember the drive home. I didn't remember anything she said to me, and I didn't remember the drive home. And this happened to me a lot in those days. And I know I've talked to a lot of other people who can relate that you can get from point A to point B in your car and you don't remember part of the route because you were on your phone or because you were lost in being overwhelmed with your life or whatever it is, mm-hmm. We're not always paying attention. And if there's one place to pay attention, it's definitely when you're behind the wheel of a car on the freeway. So that was the start of me saying no to busyness. And I stopped using my phone in the car 100% mm-hmm. on that day because I was just like smacked in the face when I pulled in the garage and thought, here I am saying I'm showing up for my kid. And I don't know what she said. Like, I had an opportunity to connect with her, mm-hmm. and I didn't. I just phoned it in. I was like, yep, okay, that sounds good. Meanwhile, I'm on email with people that I don't really, you know, care about what's happening to them in this very minute, and not time-sensitive stuff. I could have gotten back to them at the end of the day, and everybody would have been fine. Mm-hmm. You know, I was working in advertising sales. I wasn't an ER doc or somebody that was like life depended on my response. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I really had to rethink my priorities, and not just what I said my priorities were, but what my actions demonstrated that my priorities were.
Mm. That is powerful. What your actions demonstrated, because I think it's our thought of what we think we're doing, but it's our actions that speak actually louder than our thoughts or even our words.
Yeah, because there's no doubt that I thought my daughter was the most important thing in my life. I thought that then. I think that now. But when we were driving down the freeway in that car and I was checking email and returning calls, clearly I wasn't demonstrating that she was the most important thing in my life. So, mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. Then, you know, praise the Lord, you were safe that day.
Yeah.
Obviously. You have a bigger mission. You're supposed to be here longer, and you made some major changes. Talk about a little bit on the busy boycott, because you mentioned busy. You mentioned that in your book. How can one escape the busyness syndrome? Because we are all so wrapped up in the, how are you? Oh, I'm so busy.
Well, I share a fun challenge both on the website and in the book that people can actually take and do for 21 days to get a handle on their busyness. But I will say that it does start with, not the challenge, but overall, we have to start saying no when our heart says no. So instead of being a yes person, instead of people pleasing, we have to start saying no more often. That's the biggest culprit, I think, in our busyness syndrome. I think we also use busyness like we use shopping and clutter too, though, to mask the pain. Mm-hmm. So if we stay real busy, we don't have to address what's really going on because we're too busy to do it, or to deal with it. I know I was. I couldn't listen to these little dumb symptoms that I was having for many years before I was diagnosed with MS. I had them for years, but they had to all come at once for me to say, okay, now I can't ignore this. So we have to stop ignoring these like nagging signs, whether they be physical symptoms or things going on in our relationships or how we deal with money or stuff. We have to stop ignoring those things in the name of busyness. And then it all comes back to our priorities as, you know, acting in accordance to what we think is important versus what we say is important.
Acting versus what we say.
I don't know if I said that right, but yeah, like yeah. What we say, it's nice that we say things like this is important. Mm-hmm. But now let's act that way. Let's back up what we're feeling. And if it's not, if we can't, maybe it's not important. And then that's where the hands on heart practice comes in mm-hmm. to start remembering what is important to you. Mm-hmm. It's like we're trying to cram a lot of things into a short period of time here. These changes that I made took years, years. So when I say it starts with 5 minutes, it does. But then it turns into a lifetime of positive changes, at least in my experience. Mm-hmm.
And you all are going to want to pick up your own copy of Soulful Simplicity, How Living with Less Can Lead to So Much More. She does break it down very easy for you. And in here, like she said, she has four different sections, but she builds on that within them. So you're not going to feel an overwhelm. Sometimes you pick up a book, and I have read many books. I could open up my own library. Okay, for a small town. But it is something, Courtney, that you have done very well. And it's just you, it's a layer upon a layer upon a layer. And I think that actually keeps it to simplicity.
Thank you. It's how I made the changes, and mm-hmm. I couldn't have done it any other way and had them stick. I would have burnt out on change. So one thing at a time.
Mm, one thing at a time. Yeah. I like to say one step at a time leads to miles of greatness.
That's wonderful. Yeah. So true.
So true. Well, this is one we hear of the word, or not really word, it's a acronym, FOMO. But you talk about the JOMO. And I thought that was great. So can you let us in on that little secret of FOMO versus JOMO?
Sure. So FOMO, fear of missing out, which is a relatively new acronym, but not new in terms of what we experience. You know, we always think we either should be doing one more thing or people are having fun doing this thing. And then social media comes in and just amplifies that like crazy because everyone looks like they're doing all the amazing things. And we should be trying to get in on that. But what I've discovered is JOMO, which is the joy of missing out. And especially when I discovered I was an introvert and not an extrovert, like I once imagined or pretended to be, I realized I really like missing out on things. I like having that time for myself. I like not having back-to-back appointments on my calendar. Like white space on your calendar is a beautiful thing. Mm-hmm. So we have to look for that. So what's the joy of missing out instead of that fear of missing out? Why should I be happy about staying home tonight or missing that meeting in the morning or not connecting with, you know, every single person that I'm friends with over the next week? Where is the joy in that? Mm-hmm. And once you connect to that, it's so much easier to say no.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I thought that sprinkle of joy was awesome. I know when you're just trapped in the everyday life and you want to be everything to everybody, you do miss out on a lot more because you're trying to be everything to everybody. And when you step back long enough to say, okay, wait, there's joy in me saying no, and it's okay. You know, it's like, whoa, I got a, you know, that hall pass that you got when to go to the bathroom because you could just get out of class in school. You're like, yes, rock on. This is like the pass of a lifetime that you can be joyful and missing out.
Yeah. And I think we have to think about how we would feel or how we do feel when somebody cancels something that we didn't really want to attend. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not just like, okay. We're like, yes, like, I've got the night free, or I don't have to go to that, whatever it was. We can create that for ourselves by just saying no to begin with. Like, we have to do that for ourselves. We can't put our lives in everyone else's hands by saying yes all the time.
I agree. Completely agree. Well, I have to ask the basic question. I think it's a beautiful title, Soulful Simplicity.
Thank you.
What drew you to naming the book that?
It was my journey, A Soulful Simplicity. I had help in titling the book, actually. My friend Jonathan Fields recommended the name based on what the book was about. And I have to say, like, he nailed it. I mean, that really was my experience and is my experience. Mm-hmm. It's so much more than decluttering and simplifying. Like, this comes directly from my heart, which I think adds the soulful to the whole thing. And that's what makes it last. That makes it meaningful to me. And I think enjoyable to kind of be on this journey. It's not something I have to do or I should do. It's something I want to do. And that makes all the difference.
Mm-hmm. And of course, you have it all perfect, right?
Oh, yeah, I've got it all figured out now.
Well, you have in one of your chapters, you call it Stumble with Grace.
Yeah, I'm a graceful stumbler. I'm still figuring everything out, and every day I do. Mm-hmm. My morning routine helps me keep things in perspective, and my heart practice helps me be less reactive and think about how I want to proceed. But I'm still figuring stuff out and I'm still a mess a lot of the times. And I'm all right with that. I'm okay with that because it's how I'm learning. It's how I'm growing. And it just is who I am.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Well, I think you're beautiful.
I think you're beautiful too. Oh,
thank you. Okay, so before we end, because we're getting close on time, we could be here for like 3 hours.
I know.
And that's why everybody's going to want to pick up their own copy of Soulful Simplicity. It's a beautiful book. This is just the advanced copy, so it's going to be in color. I think there's lots of pinks here on this tree. It's gorgeous.
Yeah, yours won't have a binder clip on it.
Exactly. Well, you know, that's the privilege somewhat of getting the advanced copies, but it's better when you buy it yourself. And you'll enjoy the read, and it'll be something that you can really begin to utilize, especially for the new year, which brings me to your Project 333. Talk a little bit about Project 333, because I found the whole thing, I was like, yes, I'm in, but I don't know if I could do it.
That's the very typical reaction. And that usually goes on for about a year. And then some people usually try it and then they find out it's not as hard as you would think. But it's a minimalist fashion challenge that I created in 2010 to get rid of all those shoes we were talking about earlier and all the clothes. I had closets full of clothes that I have just been building on for years. And in this one case, I knew my slow and steady approach to change was not going to work. My closet was not going to have the slow and steady. So I decided to create a challenge where for 3 months, I would only wear 33 items. And that would include clothes, jewelry, accessories, and shoes. And outerwear. So in the winter, I count my coats. And I thought it would be a 3 month thing that would be fun to try and that I might learn something from. And it ended up being so powerful that today I still dress like that. So 33 items or less for 3 months. There's no magic to the number. Your number might be 45 in 3 months. It just depends on your lifestyle. It might be 25. Depending on the climate and things like that. But it was really fun for me to learn about my relationship with clothes and stuff and shopping in that way. And also to prove myself wrong on a lot of things. Like I used to think I could prove who I was by what I was wearing and that people were noticing. Nobody cares, as it turns out, what I wear. I worked full time for more than a year doing this challenge and was always with colleagues and clients and my bosses and community events, and no one noticed. So it was really amazing for me to be like, okay, all of that time you spent trying to prove who you are by what you wore didn't work. So now I dress for me.
Oh, that's beautiful. In honor of you, I took my shirt and then I have my pants, but it's also somewhat loungewear because I have the thumb holes so I can go. So I dressed it up, but I'll take off my heels when we're done chatting and I'll be ready to go and lounge away.
Look at you. I love it.
So I did. I mean, I was like, okay, I can try this. We're going to do this for her interview and see what happens. And so far, we've done a really good job, I think. Oh, okay. So in your book, I want to read a quote. You wrote, "We don't remove the clutter, reduce the stress, and boycott busyness to have a simple life. We do it to have a life."
Yeah. I think maybe that's why I had such trouble defining simplicity earlier on, because I'm really more focused on the life that was waiting for me beneath all the stress, beneath all the clutter, beneath everything. And so it was never my intention to have a simple life. I wanted my life back. I wanted my health back. I wanted my relationships back. And that's exactly what happened. So it's not that we want to have a simple life and live with the least amount of things possible. And it's we want our lives back, whatever that looks like for you. Mm.
I have to ask, with your MS, how are you doing, Courtney?
Yeah, very well. Thanks for asking. So I haven't had a relapse in more than 9 years. I feel better than I did even prior to knowing I had MS. So MS aside, like I feel like I've made gains in a lot of other health areas by making the changes that I've made.
And to think how many people around the world that you have impacted by simply applying what you learned through your journey up to this point in your journey is Soulful Simplicity.
Thank you. Yeah, it's an honor. It really is. I mean, I surely didn't think that that was the journey when I started blogging. I definitely hoped it would be, but yeah.
Oh, it's beautiful. Well, I know people are going to want to find you. They want to connect with you. So where can they say, Courtney, help?
They can definitely find all that information on the blog, bemorewithless.com. Probably the place I'm most engaged in terms of social media is Instagram. So it's just at bemorewithless on Instagram. And yeah, that's where I'd start.
Fabulous. Well, we will have all of that information for you in the show notes, along with the link where you can pick up your own copy of Soulful Simplicity. Well, before we end our chat here, I've so enjoyed our time, Courtney.
Me too.
I have one last question for you. This series is called My Strength is My Story. What has your story gifted you?
Well, now we have to talk for another hour.
Let's do it, girl.
My story gave me the path to know who I am. It really did. It brought me back to love. My story, simplicity, it all brought me back to love.
I can just feel your heart. I heard your heart, read your heart in your book, and now to hear you put life to your book, a beautiful story.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you for your time. And guess what? We just have to have you back. We can talk some more.
Let's do it.
Sounds good. Thanks so much.
Feeling inspired, ready to train for life and love your journey? Visit createyournow.com for more incredible resources to help you along the way. We'll see you next time on Create Your Now, Your Best Selfie. And remember, always be sure you consult your physician before beginning any health and fitness plan.